passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Come back. He was one of the great players in recent SEC history on the defensive line. Derrick Brown went in the first round of the Carolina Panthers a couple years ago. The great Auburn great, joining us now to talk about his career and his pass at Auburn. First of all, Derrick, great to have you on. I hope all is well. And I know you've had some nagging injuries this week, but how are things going?
Pretty good, man. Appreciate y'all having me on. Just battling through, As soon as you start camp, man, you go from 100% down. So, I'm just trying to stay in a range where I'll be able to play every Sunday.
Well, you've got the bye week, and I know everybody uses it in a different way. How are you going to take advantage of a rare weekend off?
Man, just continue to, take care of my body, be able to spend time with my family, and just, take this little break away from football. We had a rough start to it. So, just got to keep the mindset positive and get ready to go back to work next Monday.
I was watching your game the other day in Miami, and obviously you guys got off to a 14-0 lead, and then, of course, you're up against the most explosive offense in the NFL. How do you feel? I mean, there's no easy way to get around an 0-6 record, but there have been a couple of moments. How do you reverse this trend?
Oh, man, you start off by, taking this week and, resetting your mind. What's happened already has happened, and, guys got to take that mindset and get ready to keep going forward. None of us are going to lay down and quit, man. And, no matter, the adversity we face along the way, and nobody's going to come and save us. I mean, that's the attitude in the building. So, we're going to figure this thing out. It's taking time, but we're going to figure it out.
Derrick, you understand what it's like to go in the first round. There's a lot of responsibility, and you adapted very well. It's a different position than quarterback, but we'd all be curious about your interactions with Bryce Young, the number one pick in the draft, someone who has been spotlighted and much maligned by many people. How do you think it's going for him?
Oh, man, he's learning the game. It's interesting to see him, from practice to the game. He's learning the game, man. I think people don't truly understand what it's like to, be in those shoes. And, from the day one, you get drafted, you're supposed to do your job. But, the game is a completely different game than what we played in college. So to be able to come in and, he's been taking huge strides so far, man. So, kudos to Bryce and, the job he's doing. He's our team leader at the quarterback position, and, we're going to ride behind him.
Derrick, I don't want to get into this without your expertise, but it seems like there are so many differences, even at the elite level, and you played at that, and so did Bryce. How much faster is the game that you're playing now versus what you saw in the SEC, or is it something else?
Man, I think, honestly, from the beginning, man, it's just – finding your level of comfortability with the game and, being able to just be able to relax and play the game like you did when you were 6 years old. And, people say it's no pressure, but at the end of the day, do your job is a lot of pressure if you want to keep it. So, I think that's the part that just, keeping your confidence high and just, battling every week.
Yeah, but it wasn't like there wasn't a lot of pressure when you went into Tiger Stadium or the Swamp or Georgia or Alabama. I mean, these are all cathedrals of college football with 100,000 people. So everybody's experienced it, but it just does seem different, does it not? Or is it just everybody is so good?
Yeah, man. You don't go against a bad guy week in and week out. It's one of those things that, you got to put in the time and effort and, watch the tape, man. You got to watch the tape. That's the biggest thing from college to the pros for me was you got to actually sit down and learn how to watch the tape and be able to take those things and carry them out to the next week.
I know everybody tries to keep up with their former school, and it's not easy, but you're not that far away from Auburn.
Yeah.
How much do you get a chance to watch Auburn this year, and what do you think?
They're going through a stretch right now where they're trying to, find themselves. And, I got all faith in Coach Freeze and the program they're running down there. Got a chance to go down and, meet with them in the spring. But, They got something cooking, and you know, it's just gonna take time for it to get rolling. You know, I'm excited for them. I'm tuned in every single Saturday that I'm not in the air flying away to an away game. So I'm excited to be able to see this team have success over the years to come.
I don't know if you how much you were able to see, if any, of the game against Georgia a couple weeks ago, but you know, anybody who doubts what Jordan-Hare Stadium can do for a football team, we saw it there. I mean, that game should not have been close. But what were you thinking about when you suddenly saw Auburn leading and maybe with a chance at the end to make a play to even win the game?
Man, I was excited, man. The boys came out there and battled, and you know, I got a couple of Georgia guys in the locker room, so I mean, that's always an enjoyable time too. So for those guys to be able to come out and battle and, you know, play that game as hard as they did, I mean, it was great to see that. I mean, you know, I texted Coach Freeze after that. You just let them know, like, man, they're fighting. Like, that's something special.
You mentioned Georgia. They are certainly at the top of the heap right now. When you were playing, Alabama was in that position. When you traveled in the SEC, I know we're going back a couple of years. Where was the toughest place to play?
Yeah, man, it's been a while, but you know, I always enjoyed every away game, to be honest. You know, always getting a win on the road was, you know, about the same as getting a win at home, and in my head at least. You know, I had a great game in Florida. It was a loud atmosphere. LSU always was a loud time. You know, Tuscaloosa, they didn't really like us very much up there, so they
No,
were
they didn't.
pretty excited when we came to town. I think, man, every single weekend, you know, Georgia, you know, I'm not a fan of the dogs by any, but you know, when being from that state and then going back to that state to play a game, that was always kind of my game that, you know, was the, you know, I got the most heckling at. So I mean, that was always a fun time too.
Well, listen, I know it's an off week. We don't want to infringe on your time, but we appreciate you making time for us, and we'll be watching you the rest of the way, and hopefully you can get things turned around. It's never over, is it?
Nah, not by a long shot, man. Guys make a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of ways to get in the playoffs. So I mean, you know, we got 11 weeks left, so we're gonna sit down and, you know, watch the tape and figure it out over this bye week. Appreciate y'all having me.
Derek, it was our pleasure. I hope you'll come back sometime. We enjoyed it. You be well, and all the best the rest of the season with the Carolina Panthers. Derek Brown, the all-everything at Auburn, went early in the first round and is making quite a name for himself in the NFL. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Busy show. Derek Brown, really appreciate him coming on. And Chad is up next in Ohio. Hello, Chad.
My man, Paul Fine to the Big Bomb. How you getting along, buddy?
We are doing great, thank you.
Yes, sir. Living the dream over there.
I've lived it for so long, I'm going to let somebody else do it today.
I gotcha. Hey, man, it's about my fourth time calling, right? And I was just calling. I got a couple questions. One is Ohio State, Penn State. Who do you got on that?
I like Ohio State, even though I do think this is Penn State's best shot in a long time.
Yeah, I got you. And let me ask you this. Brock Bowers for Georgia. How is that going to impact SEC with Georgia? What do you think on that?
Well, I think it depends on how long he's out. We had a guest on earlier who believes he could be back for the Tennessee game. I think that's really on the number. And one thing you're not going to gamble with is a guy that's going to be worth so much money next year. But I think as long as they can get him back for the SEC championship game, if Georgia loses the
Oh,
game,
yeah.
they can make it back. Hey, thank you for the call. Bob is up next in Georgia. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
It might have answered Chad might have answered my question, you and Chad, but I'm wondering what's going on with Brock Bowers.
Well, Bob, I don't know any more than he had surgery, and it's a 4 to 6 week recovery.
Okay, that was my main question, because I was concerned when he went out in that game. I just
well, it's sure. I mean, you hate to see it, especially in a game that, you know, he could have stayed back in Athens and it wouldn't have made one bit of difference in the outcome. But the surgery that they did is called tightrope surgery. It's not brand new, but it's something that you see now with highly skilled athletes. Tua Tagovailoa had it last year, and he was back in about 5 weeks. So he had it, I mean, a couple of years ago when he was playing at Alabama. Hank is up next in Chapel Hill. Hello, Hank.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank
hey
you
there.
For wearing North Carolina colors on your tie.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really looking for an opinion. I played in the early 60s at Vanderbilt and was the first college team to do the shotgun out of Hickey, who was at San Francisco, the 49ers. But I wonder what you think of the shotgun, which is what everybody does now, and it's pretty boring to me because everybody does it. I wish there was a single wing again. I wish there was a triple option, but all we do is shotgun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that big of a fan of it, especially if you know, when you try to run the ball, I don't understand why. So, I mean, I clearly get the idea that it gives you a better view of the field. It gives you maybe a second longer in protection, but it is where we are right now, of course.
All right. Well,
hey,
thank you
very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. And Willis is in Los Angeles. Hello, Willis.
Hey, Paul. Great interview with the Major General.
Thank you very much.
Very moving. Listen, I want to reference a call I made earlier about Buckner, the quarterback that was going to Alabama from Notre Dame. And I expressed my reservations. But Saban's been out here recruiting, and it's gone the other way. He's got people coming in from Southern California that are, oh, he's got one five-star quarterback. There's probably anything that you have on the roster now. Just don't let Reese get a hold of him. And the other two kids from the Catholic schools in L.A. are five-star Jets. I mean, they're just really quality people. Chip Kelly and Lincoln Riley got whiffed. They got beat out on both of them.
Well, I mean, Nick Saban is not only the best coach of all time, he's very possibly the best recruiter of all time. And the ability to go out there, and this is now a long line of quarterbacks from California and obviously Hawaii. It's truly remarkable. But Alabama has been the biggest brand in college football now for about 15 years, so it shouldn't be that surprising.
Well, Joe Willie came from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, a different time. I mean, but to get Joe Willie to come in 1960 was probably a lot more difficult than today because, I mean, it was to get a northern player to go south. And I've talked to Joe about that before. It's quite a fascinating story how he ended up there.
Yeah. Well, the best Alabama quarterback homegrown is Stabler.
Yeah, Kenny, of course, came from South Alabama, so it wasn't – but the idea that Kenny and Joe were almost – I think they were – they may have been back-to-back. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for the call. Really do appreciate it. Great to hear from you. We'll continue, and Dan is up next in Georgia. Hey, Dan.
This is Vance.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
I hate to be critical, but Bob just asked you for an update on Brock Bowers. I'm curious as to where he might live. This be the first knowledge he's had of.
Well, I didn't want to make too much out of that, but I appreciated him asking me as his first line of information.
That was kind of scary.
Yeah, by the way, I have a similar story. You know, we talked about it here all day yesterday, and I got home last night. My wife was reading something. I can't remember what it was. Actually, it was today. It was this morning. She was looking at something and said, she said, did you realize Brock Bowers is out for the next couple of weeks? I go, I had not heard that. Where'd you see that?
Well, you know, there are those that get exemptions. I wanted to bring up something I heard today on a sports radio show.
Okay.
Out of 132 teams in the country, Alabama's offensive line rates 126th.
Not good.
What, Paul, is that really possible?
Well, I don't know exactly, Vance, the criteria they use for that, but I'm sure sacks is a big number, and knockdown sacks, and Alabama has been dreadful in that regard, so that's where the number is coming
from. Oh, well,
hell,
the quarterback's been sacked 31 times.
Yeah.
But, oh, my gosh. And I'm like, y'all really think you're going to compete for a national championship with that kind of crap?
Yeah, but, Vance, the other side of that is that they have gone to A&M and won. They've beaten Ole Miss, which is a really good team. They've navigated a couple of other not-so-good teams. And they're still alive. And the two toughest games they have remaining in the regular season are at home. That's the fuel that's generating all the conversation. Now, the next two games decide everything.
This weekend with Tennessee, after what I saw Tennessee do the other night, that's going to be some tough sledding right there.
Well,
but Alabama hadn't played four quarters of football yet
year. They have not. Tyler Booker told us that earlier, and the Arkansas game was very concerning because they were at home, they had the game wrapped up, and they could not finish it. And with that offense, you just can't lay back. It's not that good. It's not that potent. Hey, thanks, Vance. Really do appreciate your call. And Heath is up next in Alabama. Hello, Heath.
Hey, Paul. Just want to give you a big roll tide. And I was just wondering about, you know, our offensive line is so bad. How many times will Jalen Milroe be sacked this weekend?
It could be a pretty good number. I don't know what the line of demarcation is, but you know, the key for Milroe, I mean, even if he gets sacked, I mean, he manages to get out of some situations with big plays. I mean, he did that against Ole Miss. He did that against A&M. It's just the key to him is whether he gets sacked or not. It's just not turning the ball over.
I got you. Appreciate it, Paul.
Hey, thank you very, very much. Troy in North Carolina is up next.
Hey, Paul. Good morning. Good afternoon.
How's everything?
Hey, doing great. Doing great up here. Listening to all the excitement up here in North Carolina about them Tar Heels going 6-0. We probably know how that'll all turn out. But, hey,
yes.
I wanted to talk to you in reference to all the calls and all the talk about Brock Bowers. Everybody wants to talk about Brock Bowers. Yes. Yes, Paul, absolutely. He will be missed at the University of Georgia. But let me make this perfectly clear. No one monkey is going to stop this show. We are not Alabama. We are not Ohio State. We are the mighty Georgia Bulldogs, and we are going to three-peat. Heard it here, Paul. We've got more people to back it up. We're going to spread the ball around even more. Yes, absolutely he's going to be missed. He's a top-five player in the country, at least top-five player, if not the best player in the country. He's going to be missed, Paul, but we've got people. We've got dudes. We're going to be okay. Ole Miss is not going to beat us. You were saying yesterday, worried about Ole Miss. Ole Miss is probably going to get beat by Auburn. But, you know, what do you think, Paul?
Well, first of all, Troy, I really admire your confidence. I think that's really what makes Georgia so special right now is they have that belief. But I'm officially worried, so you can say I'm crazy. Let's take a break. More to come. We've had a busy, busy show. We'll find out what happened in Washington, D.C. a little bit later. There was a hearing with all the muckety-mucks about NIL. That's in the next hour.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back. Great to have all of you here. And let's check in with A.J. in Atlanta. Hello, A.J.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We're doing really well. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Paul, I want to call and I want to talk about this Texas A&M job. I just want your thoughts on this, Paul. Okay, the $70 million bout. Me and you, we both know A&M has the richest boosters in the SEC. It's not a matter of if, it's when. Now, the problem with that is you send Jimbo on his way. Who are you going to bring in, you know? I think they should go get Mike Elko, but, you know, they might just want to get away from the whole Jimbo regime, you know. I just want to know what's your thoughts on that, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you. It's becoming more of an issue than I thought. There's a columnist, Jesse Simonton, for On3 that pretty much said exactly what you just said. It's not a matter of if, but when. Brent Zorneman from the Houston Chronicle wrote a fairly negative piece today. I mean, you're starting to see mainstream media openly talk about where this program is right now. It really, until now, most people have not been talking about it because it just didn't seem within the realm of possibility. But when you look at where A&M is right now, I mean, they still have, you know, road games against Ole Miss and LSU. They're in dire straits as far as Jimbo Fisher holding this thing together. We will continue right now with more phone calls. Steve is in Birmingham. Hello, Steve.
Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I wanted to call about the Georgia guy that called here just a little bit ago, was talking about Georgia, you know, making it all the way and three-peating and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
First, they got to make it out of Atlanta. And the way it looks today, they'll probably be in Atlanta with Alabama. I don't think they'll make it out of Atlanta with a win. What do you think?
Well, there's no way to answer that question for me until I see Alabama play Tennessee and LSU. And I agree, you know, if Alabama gets through those two, wins on the road at Kentucky and beats Auburn, then, yeah, I think they would be in a really good position to beat Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at both of their play up to this point in the year, I think if they played this weekend, Alabama would take them. But, again, Bama's got to get a four-quarter game in, and I just don't see Georgia being that dominant this year.
No, but Alabama. But here's the thing with Alabama. At this point last year, Alabama was number one in the country and undefeated. So I feel good about Alabama, and I think Nick Saban has done a remarkable job of bringing this program back from a really bad place 5 weeks ago. But they still leave you wondering, and that's why. I think talk of beating Georgia is really premature.
Yeah, maybe.
By the way, I do think if Georgia was playing in Alabama this weekend, I would definitely like Alabama to win without Bowers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, if he makes it back or not, I think Bama will take him in Atlanta.
Well,
so there you go.
We've seen that before. But the only difference is this Alabama team is a little bit less dependable than what we saw 2 years ago. How about Trey, who is in Tuscaloosa? Hello, Trey.
Hey, Paul, these Georgia fans that think they're going to automatically replace a Brock Bowers just because he's got a 4 or 5 star by his name are delusional. I mean, Paul, this Brock Bowers does so much for Georgia, it's not funny, and I don't think they realize it. I mean, they put him in the backfield. They put him in motion and give him the ball. Is this who's ever replacing him? Is he going to run the precise routes that Bowers runs? Is he going to be able to block down the field like Bowers? Is he going to be able to be jammed at the line of scrimmage like Brock Bowers? This thinking that you can just stick some – and Brock Bowers has been playing for 3 years. It's delusional. He's one of the best players in college football, and that's just not simply replaced because you got another 5-star sitting over there on the bench. And what if he drops a pass or two? He runs the wrong route. Is Carson Beck going to lose a little bit of confidence? Because Brock Bowers has been his bailout guy all year long. So there's other factors involved in just bringing in another five-star saying we can replace Brock Bowers. I don't think Brock Bowers is replaceable because he does way too much. Now, that doesn't mean Georgia's not going to win and be very good. But you're not replacing Brock Bowers. I don't care who you bring in. My question to you today would be, who has the advantage at quarterback during the Alabama-Tennessee game? Because I watched Tennessee against A&M. They have a lot of the same problems on the offensive line like Alabama does. They had 13 penalties. 7 or 8 of them were pre-snap penalties. And Joe Milton got sacked 3 or 4 times. So
on what I've seen so far, I think the quarterback you could depend on more is in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, I do too. But, you know, would you say that both of them are – I would trust Milroe a little better. But I think both offenses, they both have their problems. Penalties, offensive line, and pre-snap penalties. And I think the advantage is going to be Alabama's defensive secondary and linebackers. I think that's where the advantage is going to be.
They're in no way the same type of team, but there are similarities in the way they play. Although I think Alabama has played can't believe I'm saying this, at a more consistent level than even Tennessee.
I would agree with you, Paul, but thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. You have a great day.
And to me, the big difference maker is Alabama beat a quality team in Ole Miss at home, and they went on the road and beat Texas A&M, where Tennessee beat Texas A&M at home. And so I think that's why Alabama is favored in this game by 8.5 points. Brian is up next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Hey, I just wanted to tell you one of the funniest things in college football is the looks on the Alabama fans' faces after they lose a game.
Well, it doesn't happen very often, Brian, so you better get the look in while you can.
Yes, sir. I understand what you're saying. What it is, though, they are so spoiled they don't even know it. Especially if you're a Notre Dame fan, you haven't won one in 35 years. So,
well,
you see what I'm saying?
There's some truth to that. Hey, Brian, thanks for the call. Really good to hear from you. And Rattle Jaw is up next.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Rattle.
Let me ask you a question. How long has Kirby been at the University of Georgia?
I believe his first year was 2016 or 2015. I can't remember which one. One of those two. 2016.
My point of this, Paul, is how many times has Georgia lost a star in their game, and Kirby's reaction has always been next man up. Is that not true?
Every year he's lost a big player.
Yes, sir. It is next man up. Now, my comment that I'd like to make is that every game that Georgia doesn't cover the spread, people say, well, Georgia is just lacking. But the fourth quarter is full of Georgia's team bench players. I mean, full of bench players getting plenty of experience.
Sure.
And they're not always in there with the first team quarterback. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. You know, it is impossible to replace a Brock Bowers. I'm not saying that that's not possible. But I do believe that with all the experience that our players have had over the last year or two with them playing off the bench in the fourth quarter and for extended periods of time, I think they're going to be okay. It isn't going to be easy, but I think they have the will to win. And they know they have a goal, and they know what that goal is. And Kirby has instilled that goal into them. It isn't that we're the chaser, we're being chased. And I just believe that the spirit of the team and the spirit that Kirby brings to that team will help them get through. And you know, I can be hopeful about that, as every other Georgia fan can. But I do believe that we're not out of it till it's over. And I'm just having my faith and confidence in the Georgia football secondary teams that have the players that have come off the bench and played in that fourth quarter and gain all the experience that there is to gain. Paul, I thank you again for taking my call. I love your show. I watch it every afternoon. And my wife makes me change it to something else. So you have a great afternoon, and well, go Dawgs.
Thank you for being a part of the show. And tell your wife to get another television. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back. We appreciate you being here. And Jonathan is in Alabama. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call.
Thank
you. Hey, I just got a quick question for all those Georgia fans. How many times has Kirby Smart beat Alabama? That's for you too, Paul, I guess.
Uno?
One time. And then the one time they beat them, Bama had their best player injured, who also exposed them in the SEC championship game. And then he gets hurt in the national championship game, and he's out. And now they got Brock Bowers out. Thankfully, it's sooner than, you know, end of the season. But, you know, when your key players get hurt, you're not going to play as well. And I think Georgia fans are kind of, whenever they talk about how great they are, it's always putting it up and comparing themselves to Alabama and how they're better than Alabama or you know, Bama's struggling. Georgia's beaten the teams they've expected to beat this year because they've played nobody. They haven't played anybody. Bama lost to a team that might even make it, that's probably going to make it at least to their conference championship game in Texas, and who's an actual real threat. Well, the NIL money coming in there. I mean, Paul, who's Georgia played? They've beaten the teams they've expected to beat.
Well, Georgia's, I'm trying to look and see who their best opponent is. Their best opponent is Kentucky.
Yes, and can you name if you ask anybody.
That is about to change, though, Jonathan.
Sir?
They will Missouri and Ole Miss and Tennessee, those three are all highly regarded teams.
I think they'll struggle against some of those teams. And I was going to say about Kentucky. Kentucky, nobody can even name a player on Kentucky's team. And when I saw that matchup coming up, I was like, it'd be cool to see Kentucky make it a close game. But at the end of the day, it's like I can't name a Kentucky player besides that running back of theirs. And you know, you can stop a run game pretty easy when you don't have any top offensive linemen. I mean, nobody can even think about their recruiting class. This is a basketball school, but like you said, they got Missouri coming up. They got Ole Miss. I think they'll beat these teams, but they're going to struggle a little bit against some of these teams. I mean, Lane Kiffin doesn't mess around, and I could see them, you know, giving up a lead, but they haven't played anybody. Bama's lost one game to a team that's pretty good.
It will change, though, Jonathan, is my closing comment. Stacy is in Birmingham. Hello, Stacy.
Roll Tide, Paul. Paul, I'm kind of concerned here. You had a serious telephone call with the general. I think that's what he is, yeah. General. And the next caller was Jim. And Jim, Jim was calm, Paul. He even gave you kudos, Paul. Something wrong with that.
Well, I don't want to answer for Jim, Stacy, but I think Jim is someone who's very concerned about the bigger picture of the world. I thought the key thing he said that I heard was that he prayed about what he was going to say. He realizes there are things more important than our daily subject here, but that's what we are. We're not a news show. We're a sports show.
Well, that was good to see, Paul. But I want to tell you three people who's the world's biggest fool.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this.
The first person, Michael Bratton.
Man, I'm sweating this out just to make sure. Okay, three biggest fools in the world. First person is Michael Bratton.
Michael Bratton.
Okay.
The second person, Michael Bratton. And the third person, of course, is Michael Bratton. I've been trying to call you since Friday, Paul, when he said that if Georgia played Alabama, that they would beat them by 28 points.
The three, okay, Stacy, correct me if I'm wrong here. I want to be accurate. The three biggest fools in the world. We're talking about the whole world, right?
The entire world.
Okay, and the three biggest fools in order, any particular order you can make it, Michael Bratton, Michael Bratton, and Michael Bratton.
There you go, Paul.
Okay. Can I second that motion?
Go ahead, Paul. Yeah, of course.
I officially second your nomination of Michael Bratton to occupy the three highest positions, biggest fool in the world. And my question to you,
right,
Stacey, yeah, is why is Michael Bratton 1, 2, and 3 on the biggest fools list?
Well, he's number one because he said that Texas A&M was going to beat Alabama by 14.
Oh, okay.
Number two, the reason he's number two is because the statement that he made Friday that Georgia would beat Alabama by 28. And the reason he's the third biggest fool is because he's going to say something else stupid.
Well, I think that something else stupid could be coming this week in relation to the Alabama-Tennessee game.
Well, let's wait and see.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, he did say some things about Jimbo Fisher that turned out to be true. You will give him.
Well,
that
was about the only thing that he said. That was about the only thing, Paul.
Well, Stacey,
so Paul, I call
I
you
don't
Dave
know,
tomorrow.
I don't know if the rat is watching right now, but if he is.
And then, Paul, he says, when he said what he said, Paul, he said, is Jim going to call? No, he said, is Larry going to call me?
Well, Stacey, if you knew either one of those guys, you might be concerned. Hey, thanks for the call. We head to the final hour. We'll get an update on what happened at the nation's capital today relating to sports right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.